Moncrief on News Talk.
As you may know, Vladimir Putin has been visiting North Korea, and as part of the niceties involved, Kim Jong-un gifted Putin a pair of dogs. Dogs are a bit of a thing among autocrats. 3 years ago, the president of Turkmenistan, whose name I won't even attempt to pronounce, unveiled a 6-metre golden statue of his pooch. But there's historical precedent to this too. Simon Tierney is here to run through some despots and their dogs. Afternoon, Simon.
Afternoon, Sean.
So this isn't Putin's only dog, or hasn't been his only dog, I assume.
No, Putin has been collecting dogs for a long time. At the moment, I've counted that he has 6 that are alive. Not all of them can be accounted for.
Uh-oh.
But these 2 latest dogs that he has are Pungsans. Pungsan is the name of the species. So if I was to describe them to the listeners, Sean, they look a little bit like a Siberian husky. They're a very rugged dog that can survive very low temperatures. They're brave and brazen, and they're everything that Putin would want to be associated with. And I think that's the key point here. Although they're very cute as well.
No, they are kind of cute. You know, I mean, if they were a bit smaller, they'd be one of those dogs you could put in your handbag. But obviously, he likes a macho dog. The dog represents him and the kind of person he is.
He does. And I mean, he still has Coney. Now, Coney is his most famous dog. She is a black Labrador. And there's a bit of a story about Coney, because in 2007, Coney was brought into a meeting room where Angela Merkel was in a dialogue with Putin. And Merkel famously doesn't like dogs because she was bitten by a child and she completely froze up. And it almost became a diplomatic crisis. And Putin even had to apologize to the German chancellor.
Mm.
So, you know, you can't be bringing dogs in willy-nilly because you don't know how they're going to react. But that's the whole point of it. And people criticized Putin at the time because they said, actually, it was a deliberate kind of intimidating method of intimidating your guest.
And yeah, because he did it in front of, I think they hadn't even had the meeting and there was media in the room. And so he did it so that she'd freeze up when the dog went up to her. And apparently the German press were like going bonkers because they knew that he knew that she was scared of dogs. So it was deliberately designed to intimidate her.
It really was, you know. And Putin has always associated himself with animals. I mean, who can forget, unfortunately, the indelible image of him riding shirtless horseback through the Siberian wilderness. He's, you know, autocrats use animals in a way to project the personality that they want to convey to the public. In 2008, Sean, he was given a pet tiger cub. Now, he invited the press to see this tiger to his Dhaka. And he responded to the press famously at the time. He said, "She eats meat. 2 kilos in the morning and 2 kilos in the evening." Now, that was a pet tiger. He did promise that he was going to transfer the tiger to Moscow Zoo. We don't know what happened to that tiger, or is it still in the Dhaka? But he certainly wouldn't be the first autocrat in history to take possession of a big cat, as we will see.
Yeah, and so Mussolini liked dogs as well, but he had Great Danes. Crikey, they would have been taller than him.
Yeah, Great Danes are a super animal now for a figure like Il Duce. You know, big animals, big and intimidating. But there is a famous photograph that I came across of Benito Mussolini in the 1920s, where he's holding a lion cub, as you would a puppy, on his lap in a car. And he had a real affinity with lions. He, of course, one of the famous quotations attributed to Mussolini is, "It's better to live one day as a lion than 100 years as a sheep." But there was a quote in the New York Times, or not a quote, but a little section from an article that I found in their archive from March the 23rd, 1925. And I just want to read this for you, Sean, because it gives you a sense of this, of course, is before any pact with Hitler or anything like that, before World War II. And the New York Times journalist says, Premier Mussolini's first thought on leaving his home today for the first breath of fresh air, which he's enjoyed in 5 weeks, was for his pet lion named Italia, which he keeps in Rome Zoological Gardens. We also know that later on he had another lion called Raz. So he was fond of lions. He claimed that he was trained in lion taming, which of course should be on any dictator's resume, shouldn't
absolutely.
It?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Hitler, of course, had German shepherds, but Blondie, that was a kind of odd name for it. Well, I suppose maybe not, an Aryan dog. Yes, that makes sense, doesn't it?
It does, an Aryan dog. This was a German shepherd. Now, Blondie is probably one of the most famous pets of dictators in history, in 20th century history, because of what happened to poor Blondie. Now, I'm going to take you through what happened here. Basically, Blondie was gifted to Hitler in 1941, Sean, by Martin Bormann, who listeners will probably be familiar with, a very high-level Nazi. I mean, you know, this is like Kim Jong-un giving the dog yesterday. This is before, you're not supposed to give dogs as gifts. You know, like people should choose a dog through their own volition, because then you know that they're going to be responsible for it. And certainly don't be giving a dog to a Nazi or to a dictator. But I came across a fascinating eyewitness account of what happened to Blondie. There's this book called The Last Days of Hitler, and it basically examines what life was like and what actually happened in the Führer bunker in those last days in April 1945, as the Red Army was advancing on the capital. And Hitler knew, obviously, that him and Eva Braun were going to take their own lives before the Russians arrived and discovered them. But in order to test the method of suicide, they decided to try it out on the dog first. Now, Otto Gunscher, who was one of his aides, he recounted in 1956 exactly what happened to Blondie. And he said in his testimony, on the 29th of April, the effects of the poison were tried out on his dog Blondie on Hitler's orders. Professor Hasse administered the poison by crushing a file in his throat with a pair of pliers. The dog then fell dead as if struck by lightning.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, it's really dark. So basically what Hitler did on his orders was that he got a phial of prussic acid, or what we might know more commonly as cyanide, and this was crushed in the dog's mouth and the dog died. The dog was found by the Russians a few days later.
But it was Göring who had, he had lions as well.
Göring did have lions. Göring, you know, the number two for a long time before he went AWOL during the war, Hitler's number two and the head of the Luftwaffe, he had an image of himself as this kind of macho German with, you know, superpowers. He used to wear a cape when he went around the place. He had all sorts of uniforms that he used to wear. But he partnered with Dr. Lutz Peck, and Dr. Peck was the director of Berlin Zoo, who was keen, I suppose, to ingratiate himself with the Nazis, Sean, and he supplied 7 pet lions to Göring between 1933 and 1940. Now, Göring used to keep these lions in Karrenhall, which was his mansion outside Berlin. And he used to use them just like Putin did with his dog when Merkel arrived. He used to use them as a kind of a way to intimidate his guests. And he would bring them in. He's kind of like Mr. Burns says in the Simpsons, you know,
release the hounds.
He would kind of say, release the cubs at an opportune moment. And suddenly the records show that they were cubs, but honest to God, Sean, I've seen some photographs this morning, and I think I tweeted actually a photograph of one of Göring's lions this afternoon. And these are big animals. They do not look like cubs at all. I mean, they look like fully grown lions. And he would bring them in, and he really used them to demonstrate his own power. There's a very funny story of when Charles Lindbergh, the famous aviator who was the first to cross solo nonstop from New York to Paris in the 1920s, he was granted an audience with Goring in the 30s. And when him and his wife arrived in, the lions were summoned, and one of them jumped up onto Goring's lap and peed all over his beautiful white suit. And Goring was not happy with that at all.
No, so, more than he deserved. Simon, we do have to leave it there. That was Simon Tierney there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.